final case of the day is United States against Sims.
May I please this honorable court?
Counsel for the government.
I believe, and in my reply brief, I kind of make this clear, that this is a case of first impression. There are many, many, many drug sales in this country over the years, and yet we have no reported decision where a person gets arrested after a sale and they find additional drugs in his pocket and that becomes two predicate acts. That is essentially what this case is, even though there is a time separation of 7 days.
See, that's what I have the problem with in your theory. Even if the order had been reversed, if he had first been arrested for possession and then a week later for the sale, you might say he was still disposing of the same drugs. But I don't see any evidence, especially with a man like Mr. Sims, that the drugs he was, the four rocks he has on his person on the 18th, couldn't have been some new shipment, or, you know, he gets it from a friend. I mean, it could be anything. It could be completely unrelated.
It requires speculation. I believe that's my point.
Well, but he is indicted separately, and there's a full week. You've got our Hudspeth case, which is a problem, given that, a week isn't a short period of time. Plenty of time to get rid of the drugs. If he'd gotten arrested on the 11th, he thought, I'm going to turn my life around.
Your Honor, the court has made it very clear that the opposite circumstance, two crimes being committed on the heels of each other, which are separate and distinct, are two predicate acts.
Right.
Here, though, we have a possession, which is a continuing offense. What if he had been arrested and there was probable cause when he made the sale, and those four rocks were still in his pocket?
But we don't know it's the same four rocks, do we?
That's my point. And couldn't you actually argue?
Why does that point help you? I
believe it helps me because it's one criminal episode.
Well, so you think that the second prosecution was barred by the Double Jeopardy Clause? Is that your contention?
No.
If it's not barred by the Double Jeopardy Clause, that means it's a separate crime. And if it's a separate crime, it's obviously committed on a different occasion. They are a week apart. What's left after Hudspeth and Nigg?
Hudspeth is very clear that separate convictions do not necessarily mean separate predicate acts. And I'm going to point to footnote 10 of Hudspeth, where the court makes it very clear. A single sale could result in five separate counts. And one of the counts is possession with intent to sell. It doesn't mean they are separate and distinct episodes with a definable beginning and a definable end. And that's the problem. And if this court were to take the government's position, you would in effect be entering a decision opposite the Blackwood decision, which the Fourth Circuit talks about in Letterlow, where they arrest a person with a lot of marijuana in his car, they go back to his motel room, and there's like 10 times as much marijuana. It's a single predicate act. The two quantities of marijuana, you may as well look at as one. And that's what I'm saying here. If he had been arrested and he had drugs in his pocket, it's still one predicate act. He never made the conscious choice. To answer your question, what if he actually made the conscious choice, I'm not going to sell these four rocks in my pocket. I'm going to leave them there and maybe use them myself or throw them away. Well, then you say, well, there are not separate aggressions. There are not separate distinct criminal decisions. He actually makes a decision not to sell the rocks.
But I guess I can't get away from the sense that you're assuming that his sale on the 11th was from some larger stash that also included these four rocks. And had he introduced evidence to that effect, you know, somebody testifies, no, you know, he only gets a shipment once a month and he keeps it until he gets rid of it. Anything to show how this was a continuous.
Well, Hudspeth is the answer. It covers a lot of ground. It actually says multiple indictments, multiple counts, doesn't solve this particular issue of separate occasions.
I agree with that, but I'm trying to push into the facts a little bit. I have no problem with that general statement. I just don't
know case is a little difficult because we're talking about drugs as opposed to robberies or burglaries, where we can look at premises and locations and different elements. But in fact, they could all be part and parcel of the same offense. And so, should he be
lost about why that matters? Suppose the defendant uses fraud to sell securities on Monday, and then he tells another lie to sell more securities on Tuesday. And securities in the same firm, it's all one scheme, but I take it that's two convictions.
It's like two sales. And I don't argue that two drug sales, even 10 seconds apart, is two predicate acts. I agree with Your Honor. But this is not two sales. He never makes the conscious decision to make another sale.
That's irrelevant. I mean, I'm put in mind of Obi-Wan Kenobi's line to a guy who tries to sell him death sticks in Star Wars 2, which is, you don't want to sell me death sticks. I don't want to sell you death sticks. You want to go home and rethink your life. I want to go home and rethink my life. Right? After this guy makes his first sale, he could go home and rethink his life, but he obviously didn't.
I think Your Honors have to look at the fact that this happens every day. Police surveil street sales every day. They send in an undercover officer. Then they go in and they sweep and they find drugs hidden in bushes and bags of drugs. It's one predicate act. Otherwise, the cases would be legion of these people doing street sales where only one sale is charged and then a separate conspiracy, and the sale and the conspiracy would be separate predicate acts. It's just not the case. And requiring for recidivist purposes separate aggressions is not a bad way to describe the act of situation. And I ask the court to make its ruling within that framework. Thank you.
Ms. McShane.
May it please the court. My name is Heather McShane. I'm an assistant United States attorney, and I represent the United States in this appeal, the appellee. The district court correctly found that the offenses of which defendant was convicted in the state court, unlawful possession with intent to deliver of less than 15 grams of cocaine, that's case 00CF202, and his conviction for unlawful delivery of less than 15 grams of cocaine on January 11th, case 00CF202, were committed on occasions different from one another, the language in the Armed Career Criminal Act.
So you would agree that if he had faced in state court charges for both sale and possession with intent to distribute, all based on the January 11 incident, that there would just be one occasion?
On the same date, Your Honor?
That's what I said.
Yes.
All January 11. So that's one occasion, even though the state would be entitled to indict him on both charges.
Yes, Your Honor. And under the Hudspeth framework, in that scenario, he wouldn't have had an opportunity to cease and desist. He would have had one event, one day, one location, and not
so
an opportunity to walk around.
So how long does that go for the second one, for the possession with intent to distribute? If it's an hour later, does he have to ditch it? I mean, this is not something that fits as easily in the Hudspeth framework as two sales or two robberies or three robberies, as the case may be, of businesses in a mall or what have you. When you possess, is there some moment at which the occasion one number one stops and occasion number two begins?
Your Honor, I don't think that I can delineate an exact time frame, but under the Hudspeth framework, an opportunity to walk away from the crime, to throw away, get rid of the drugs that were still in the defendant's possession, if there is that moment in time where that distinction could be made, then I do think you get much closer to the line of separate offenses. Versus a scenario where someone is arrested for delivery at the time of arrest, at the time that transaction has occurred, that defendant still has also drugs in his pocket. That seems to me that you would not have a strong argument under Hudspeth that those are separate. But when you have a situation where you've got someone selling the drugs 20 minutes, an hour later, he did have an opportunity to throw those drugs still in his pants pocket away. Given the facts here, where you actually have a seven-day span, this is clearly not a close call under Hudspeth. These are clearly separate offenses.
Ms. McShane, except the time frame of the undercover sale, and then they just tail him home, and 2 or 3 hours later, rather than a week, we still have two separate there.
It's a much closer call, Your Honor, but I do think that a strong argument could be made under Hudspeth that those are separate offenses, especially if he had the opportunity, to the extent that the possession relates to the drugs in the,
so
in the
as
pocket.
As long as you release or don't arrest, I should say, at the time of an undercover sale, the temporal aspect of delay before subsequent focus on the defendant is sufficient.
If I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm not
in
sure.
In other words, they could have arrested him at the time of the sale.
They could have, Your Honor, but they didn't.
But they didn't. No, I understand that. So I guess, you know, line drawing is always difficult, and I'm familiar with Hudspeth. But I'm suggesting that so I'm sure you'd say 6 days is okay as well as seven. I'm just asking 6 hours versus seven, that's all.
Your Honor, I think one factual...
I mean, you can see the potential.
I do, Your Honor, and I completely agree that there are some very close calls under the Hudspeth framework. And when you're down to a matter of hours, if the possession relates to those drugs, though, in the defendant's pocket, I still think even if it's a matter of hours between the sale of the drugs following that defendant to his home, he had an opportunity to ditch the drugs in his pocket that he possessed that presented the
Well, if he's being surveilled, they ought to be careful about throwing them away, right?
Well, if he knew he was being surveilled, he most likely... Well, yes, Your Honor.
And there's more than just this opportunity. I mean, the fact is, on the six-hour scenario where he's under surveillance, we know for a fact that it's all still the same drugs, that it's the occasion of possessing those drugs with intent to distribute and distributing a few of them and not getting around to distributing some of them. So from an occasion point of view, as opposed to a separate offense point of view, you'd have a reason to think it was one occasion. By the time you stretch it out and you have a record with no proof about whether the drugs are the same or not, the reason to infer that they're the same diminishes over time.
And I completely agree, Your Honor. There's nothing in this record to substantiate that the drug stash that was used for the January 11th sale, that the drugs later located on the defendant 7 days later, that those drugs were from that same stash. There's nothing in the record to substantiate that. However, even if there were, even if that could be assumed or there was something to support that, the defendant here had 7 days between the sale on the 11th to when he possessed on the 18th with the intent to deliver. He had 7 days to ditch the drugs, you know, leave this life behind, and he didn't. And under the Hudspeth framework, this is just not a close call, that these are separate offenses. And combined with the third predicate offense of aggravated discharge of a weapon, the district court correctly found that Mr. Sims was an armed career criminal. For all of the reasons that are cited in the government's brief, if the court has no further questions, the government would respectfully ask that this court affirm the district court's conviction and sentence in this case. Thank you.
Mr. Favelli.
Thank you. I would briefly like to call the court's attention to the Hudspeth case, which is the key. But the problem with the Hudspeth case is that it represented burglaries, which are fairly easy to see, are separate and distinct. And so the majority opinion found it to be a bright-line rule, but the partial concurrence penned by Judge Flom, I'd like to point the court's attention to. While the lapse of time surely is an important factor in determining the number of occasions or episodes, I read our cases to suggest that the practical considerations, whether the events in question reflect distinct aggressions or demonstrate heightened criminal culpability or dangerousness to society, may also be relevant. That is where this case falls, Your Honor. And I believe, even though it could be multiple convictions, it is a single episode. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Mr. Clavelli. We appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment. The case is taken under advisement.